Austin, Texas, it's David Knight.
Rocking around the Christmas tree at the Christmas party hop. Mistletoe hop.
Welcome to Real News on this Friday, December 8th, 2017. Well, we've got a lot of snow down here in the Austin area. But in California, we got Hollywood celebrities like Joy Behar in response to the fires there saying, I think this is global warming. This is man-made climate change. Well, come to Austin. This is different. That's why they say, oh, it's climate change. Anything that's unusual, except it's not unusual for fires to happen in California. The extent of the fires is unusual. But, you know, we have situations every time we've got, it was unusual not to have hurricanes in Florida for a very long time. Then we had several hurricanes this season. They start screaming climate change. Well, no, it was actually getting back to the way climate has typically been. And we see this happening everywhere. You know, tornadoes in Oklahoma, that's not unusual. It's not climate change. Fires, unfortunately, and earthquakes in California are not unusual. So California fires, earthquakes, Oklahoma tornadoes, Florida hurricanes, that's the price that we pay living in these various areas. Everywhere's got its own unique things, but it doesn't necessarily mean that there is climate change, let alone man-made climate change. We're going to take a look at that. We also have some interesting developments in terms of politics. I would say the collusion between the Democrats and the federal government is really what needs to be looked at here. Forget about the collusion between Trump and Russia. There isn't anything there. But what we're seeing now is deep collusion between the Democrats and other parts of the federal government. We also have some violence that happened over the last 24 hours or so. There was another school attack. The Democrat senator there, the U.S. senator, is saying, yeah, it's time for us to ramp up gun control. Well, we got a couple of stories to tell you about some police brutality, but also a story out of Georgia about a woman saving a police officer with a gun, who had a gun. And we have had, didn't report on it last couple of days because the other news that was coming in, we have had passed in the House of Representatives a reciprocity act for carry, so that people who have been vetted by the government, trained at various places, and then vetted for concealed carry would be allowed to travel with their weapon of choice to protect themselves, to protect others, including even police officers sometimes. This is a woman who protected a police officer. And so what is the equalizing factor here? Do you think she would have been able to jump into this fight where the guy was beating up the police officer? Would she have been able to do anything about that on her own? Probably not. If the guy is beating up a police officer, I don't think she would have been able to do anything. But the gun was the equalizing factor. And of all the people who are victimized by this, it's women and the elderly who need to have a firearm to equalize things. But if you carry this after you've been vetted, after the government has examined you, you've been trained, you've gone through all of the rules, signed off on all the paperwork, treated your God-given rights as if they were a government-granted privilege, even after you've done all of that, and shown what a good citizen you are, shown how responsible you are, get trained. That's not good enough for the Democrats. They want to have you in legal jeopardy, as we see people passing through places like New Jersey. We're also going to be talking about efforts to censor not only Christmas, but Christians. There are calls in the UK now to ban Franklin Graham from traveling to the UK after they've already banned people like Michael Savage. Now they want to go after Franklin Graham. Do they have a problem with people like Kevin Spacey, who was at the Old Vic in London for a long time, or Harvey Weinstein? Have you seen any calls to ban those type of people? No. They offer them subsidies to come. Please come. When you talk about Franklin Graham, some of the people who are his biggest critics are other Christian denominations. That's not something that's unusual. We've seen that throughout history. In the past, different Christian denominations would kill each other like the Muslims are doing now. That's typically not happening, but they are moving to censor people. And we're going to take a look at what's going on with Al Franken. And another member now, a Republican member, has resigned. But did Franken really resign? He said he might do it in the coming weeks. We've got a poll up at Libertarian. We'll talk to you about that. What did he really do yesterday? He did a lot of virtue signaling. He did a lot of finger pointing at Trump and at Senator Roy Moore, but he didn't accept any responsibility. We'll be right back.
the InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. We have some interesting news today. We're going to take a look at what's going on in Congress. We've had yet another individual, this time a Republican, who has resigned out of Congress. So we're going to take a look at updates to Conyers and also to Frank. And I have a poll on my Twitter account, Libertarian. It said Al Franken really didn't apologize yesterday. If you look at what he had to say, we carried his speech yesterday live, last 15 minutes, and we didn't have time to get the entire speech. But it was kind of interesting because he said, well, I deny some of these charges and others, I remember them differently. So he didn't admit to anything. He didn't admit to anything. He kept telling us what a champion he was of women, that all women needed to be heard and so forth. So a lot of virtue signaling, a lot of self-congratulation from Al Franken. But he didn't actually resign. And he didn't say he did anything wrong. He denied he did anything wrong. The only wrongdoing was the wrongdoing, he said, of Donald Trump and Roy Moore, as he pointed fingers at them. And he said he would resign in the coming weeks. What does that mean? What does that mean? So I said, what is he up to? Was he just holding that press conference yesterday to try to shut down growing revulsion of him? Because the Democrats, especially the women in the Senate, were disgusted with him. And so is he trying to tamp that down so that he can either stay? If Roy Moore wins, he wants to maybe stay. Or at the very least, if he has to leave, he's trying to rebuild his image. So maybe he'll be able to sell books or something at some point in the future. Maybe he'll be able to get back on Saturday Night Live. They seem to have pretty low standards. he wasn't funny even when Saturday Night Live was funny. You know, there was a time when you had real comedians. You had people like John Belushi and his Sam Rice skits, and you had Chevy Chase, and you had Dan Aykroyd with the Coneheads. They were doing original comedy then, but now it's just politics. A bunch of political hacks is what they've become. So Al Franken would be the great, big, great place for him to hide out post-Senate, if he, in fact, is leaving. So I put up a poll, and you can see it at Libertarian. What do you think? Is he planning on staying? 49% think he is. And we've had about 10,000 votes there. 26% said, well, I think it's damage control. I think he's leaving. Another 25% said he's staying for the Christmas party. You better watch out because this guy could really be dangerous at the Christmas party because all bets are off. There's no penalties now because he's already said if he's really intending to leave, you better go in there with some body armor if you're female because there's no telling what Al Franken's going to do at the Christmas party this year for the Democrats. Meanwhile, John Conyers talked about yesterday the fact that his son, his heir apparent, it had come out that he had been accused by a woman of attacking her, stabbing her with a knife, spitting on her. And he goes, no. She was a self-inflicted wound. And the police said, well, nobody witnessed this, so we'll go with the congressman's son and what he has to say. We'll believe him instead of the woman. You know, women have a right to be believed, except when the person is the congressman's son, then they don't have a right to be believed. Even if they're bleeding from a stab wound, no, don't go with that. So this is not something that happened decades ago. This is something that happened right there. But now there's something else that came out, and this came out yesterday as well. Actually, came out on Wednesday. One of the accusers of John Conyers said that he brought up Chandra Levy when she turned down his advances. And she said, I thought that was really creepy. I got out of the car and ran. She said that her name is Courtney Morse. She told the Washington Post that Conyers told her one night he was interested in a sexual relationship and held her hand in her lap after driving her home. She said when she rejected the advances, he brought up Chandra Levy's case. Now, Chandra Levy was a congressional aide who disappeared, was eventually found dead, murdered, and in the desert. They eventually arrested an illegal immigrant, even though people learned that she was having an affair with a congressman. They arrested an illegal immigrant. They convicted him, but then they overturned that conviction later. And then they said, well, we're going to do another trial. And they said, you know what, never mind. We're just going to deport him. A little bit suspicious, especially when Conyers brings it up and says, he said he had insider information on the Chandra Levy case. Now, you know, why would you bring up something like that? Why would you bring up, if you've got an aide and you're making sexual advances to her and she declines it, why would you bring up a congressional aide who was having an affair with a congressman and turned up dead? She kind of took that as a threat. She says, I don't know if he meant it to be threatening, but I took it that way. Well, I think you probably should. I think you probably should take that as a threat. She said, I got out of the car and ran. And, of course, then quit her job as a paid summer internship. Yeah, it's pretty creepy what's going on in Congress. And it's pretty creepy that people like Nancy Pelosi have been just fine with covering this up for a very long time. Let's take a quick look at what's going on in California. New fires appearing daily, and we have some new fires happening there. The largest of Southern California's fast-moving fires has engulfed more than 115,000 acres north of Los Angeles, while more are burning to the southeast of the city, reports NPR. Authorities say efforts to contain the wildfires have been thwarted by high winds that are fanning the flames. They've had at least 439 homes and other buildings destroyed by the largest, the Thomas Fire, and that is only 5% contained. Now, one person told AP, we drove through a wall of flames on Wednesday night. I didn't know if we'd make it out. We just put the accelerator down and went. So meanwhile, newly spawned Lilac Fire, which has scorched 4,100 acres in San Diego County, has already claimed 20 homes and threatened 5,000 more. It's moving to the west rapidly, and authorities say that it could soon burn a corridor all the way to the ocean. So you have stories of people with horse businesses, and they said it was moving so fast it just had to let the horses out and give them a chance to run for it. But when we look at these people who are just driving through a wall of flames, and I've seen these pictures showing literally a wall of flames. I'm looking at that, and I said to my wife, it's like, wow, you know, how, you know, are you going to keep driving in that direction? But of course, you don't know what's behind them or to either side. And I think it's interesting, USA Today has a story how Waze sent commuters towards some of the California wildfires. What the app does is it takes a look at where traffic is and it routes you where there's no traffic. Well, guess what? A lot of those places where there's no traffic was because they were on fire. And they say that they use this information that they collect from the all the different sources that are tracking you everywhere you go, folks. Everywhere you go. They're tracking your phone. They're tracking your car. And they're reporting in there. And they say they do work also with transportation authorities. They have teams of local map editors. When they have a disaster, they go in and they block off these areas. And they say they did that in California, but it took them a couple of hours to update that because the fires are moving so quickly. And, of course, Waze is a great application. I'm not dumping on Waze. I use Waze. That's my preferred route. I find that they're excellent in terms of avoiding traffic. It's my go-to app. But I think it highlights the dangers that we have when we create algorithms and things like self-driving cars. Do you think your Johnny Cab in the future is just going to merrily take you down a burning corridor of fire? Yeah, probably. And then they'll say, well, you know, we were working on the maps, but we just didn't get them to Johnny Cab quickly enough. And, you know, he just toasted these people. I mean, the early days of the map applications, you had people who would blindly follow these maps down into remote areas and get lost because there was an error on the map. There was an error in the routing, and they'd route somebody down into remote areas of national parks. One particular case I remember, there was a bridge out, and the couple were driving, and they saw the signs there said bridge out. But their app was telling them to go ahead. So what are you going to believe, the app or your lying eyes? And they kept driving. The guy didn't slow down. He just drove right off a bridge. That was a bridge that was out. And his wife died, I think, and he survived. One of them survived, one of them died. But this is where we are headed. Later in the program today, we're going to be talking to Eric Peters of EP Autos. We're going to be talking about the move towards self-driving cars, but specifically we're going to talk about how the government came down on one Volkswagen executive this week very hard and how they're shutting down truckers. We've had some economic news. We'll be right back. We'll tell you what's happening with that. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. As I was saying, as we're going to break, we're going to have Eric Peters, who writes about cars and liberty. He's going to be joining us in the next hour. You know, we had November non-farm payrolls rising 228,000 versus an estimated 200,000. And that's good. We're glad to see that happen. But as we look at the non-farm payrolls, we have to understand there's a decline in farm employment because we've had automation there. And we're about to see vast segments of our economy be automated all at once with artificial intelligence, with self-driving cars, taking out the people who earn their living in transportation, transporting those non-farm goods or other manufactured goods. You know, we've seen the government coming after the ranchers, the miners, the loggers, the farmers, all these different people. And the people who live in the cities don't really seem to care about that because they don't understand what is coming down the road. It's coming for everybody. It's coming for your home. It's coming for your ability to freely move around. And it's coming for your job as well. He's got an article we're going to talk about, Eric Peters does, Cowboys, Truckers, and Us. Because even though there's, as he puts it, a new fatwa from the federal government against truckers, it's going to go into effect on December the 18th. And this is before they come up with the automated trucks that are going to take out so many jobs there. This is something that is getting broader and broader as the government is coming out and saying, I don't think we can trust humans to drive cars anymore. We're just talking about the Waze situation, routing people into areas that were on fire. It's a good algorithm. But whenever you do things by algorithm, whenever you set up software systems, they have shortcomings. Anybody that has worked with a computer long enough should understand that by now. Most of us work with computers. How can we not see this coming? As somebody who's worked with them all my life, programmed them, I understand shortcomings. And you know what? You can't just wave a magic wand and say, but it's going to be artificially intelligent. It'll be just fine. Isn't going to happen that way. We're going to take a look at some of the other reactions to the fires from Hollywood celebrities, which I kind of find amusing. Before we do, real quickly, I want to remind you of some of the sales we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We have DNA Force now 33% off at InfoWarsStore.com. Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, our multivitamin formula that allows you to take a wide assortment of essential vitamins and minerals without taking a lot of pills. That is now 50% off. It's great tasting, and you know, if you can drink your vitamins and minerals, then you can make it taste any way you want to. Very, very easy to take and great tasting. And we also have Super Blue fluoride-free products, our toothpaste, our mouthwash. That is something that if you haven't tried it, right now is a great time to try it while it's 50% off. We take out the harmful things like fluoride, and we put in iodine and nano silver to kill bacteria in your mouth that will create gum disease, that will also create heart disease. And we have a new product, our newest supplement, the InfoWars line, Alpha Powder. Alpha Power, 50% off. It has things like niacin, zinc. It has a patented extract of a potent Malaysian herb. It's been used for thousands of years traditionally for fertility and libido in men. You can get that along with Super Male Vitality. You can get that combo pack 50% off when you buy them together. So take a look at InfoWarsStore.com, the many products that we have there, and we appreciate your support. Let's take a look a little bit more at the fires. A week ago, we had Joy Behar on The View. And remember how excited she was? We played you those video clips of how excited she and her audience were. They thought they had Donald Trump. Instead, they had ABC fake news. And then the despair the following Monday when she said, well, it wasn't fake news. It wasn't fake news. It was just a mistake. Just a mistake. So I said, yeah, well, maybe we can call ABC News mistake news now. So 1 week after jumping in all over this ABC fake news, Joy Behar hasn't learned anything yet. She said that these California wildfires that we're talking about, quote, must have something to do with the planet heating up. Okay. This is the way Joy processes information. She might want to take a look at the fact that we don't have the rest of the world turning in spontaneously combusting. So that might give her some idea that it's not about that. But they tried to say, well, it's because it's dry and it's hot in California. And it's like, well, that's not strange either. You remember the old song, you know, It Never Rains in California? But girl, let me warn you, man, it pours. So they have had that kind of weather for a long time. And I would think that Hollywood celebrities would understand that, but they don't. They don't. And it is hitting some very expensive, exclusive suburbs outside of L.A. Some of the celebrities are had to flee their homes. Chrissy Teigen, I think is the way you pronounce her name. Paris Hilton, say, I don't follow the paparazzi. Chelsea Handler, Rupert Murdoch. And Chelsea Handler, who just last week was making all kinds of slurs about Sarah Sanders, the White House press secretary, calling her all tarted up, essentially calling her a whore. Chelsea Handler, who makes her career by parading around naked. I wonder if she had time to grab her clothes or she even cared when she fled. But she said she had just evacuated her house. She said, tweeted out, it's like Donald Trump is setting the world on fire, literally and figuratively. Stay safe, everyone. It is dark time. So there you go. It is man-made global warming. It is Donald Trump. These are the celebrities that people give so much credence to. Meanwhile, we have, if you remember a few years ago, what was it, 2008, 2009 or something like that, we had ClimateGate in East Anglia University in the UK. They were caught with a bunch of emails where they were saying, these models are not working out. All those convenient lies that Al Gore told people, they're just not panning out. Our models are not working. We have to find some way to hide the decline. And they're passing these emails back and forth between the academics at various places. And it created a big scandal until they tamped it down and said, no, see, there's nothing here, nothing to see, move along. And it even involved some people here in the United States. I was part of a group that tried to get the emails from Michael Mann, University of Virginia. He said, no, that's my private emails. Even though they were done on university time, they were done on, as he's being paid by the university while he was working there, they're done on university computers. And even though the information that he had there, the research that he had there, had been used to craft public policy, no, you can't see that. Can't see that. It's proprietary. It's like, well, you've already released the conclusions. Can we see the data that you use to come to those? No, you can't see that. Can't see that. Now we've got a new one, Tidalgate. And this comes from James Dellingpole at Breitbart. Climate alarmists are caught faking sea level rise. They keep faking the data. Alarmist scientists have been caught red-handed tampering with raw data in order to exaggerate sea level rise. The raw unadjusted data from three Indian Ocean gauges showed that local sea level trends in the last 140 years have been very gently rising, neutral or negative. But after the evidence had been adjusted by tidal record gatekeepers at the Global Data Bank Permanent Service for Mean Sea Level, it suddenly showed a sharp and dramatic rise. Imagine that. Same thing we saw with ClimateGate. They're still playing the same tricks. There was not one but two releases. Interestingly enough, somebody put them on a Russian server. Russians seem to like to tell us the truth about our officials who are lying to us. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Making sense common again. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. You know, we were just talking about how climate alarmists, scientists who make their money by being alarmists, have just been caught cooking the books on sea level. We've caught them cooking the books on temperature and other measurements as well in the past, and they just keep going because it suits the government's purpose for them to do that, and it suits their own economic purpose. They are the court jesters to these government officials who want to enact controls over our lives, over our economy. And as I was thinking about the bogus equations, and we had a couple of weeks ago, we had Lord Monckton. He was on his way to debunk these climate models. He had looked at the mathematics of it. He said, this is total nonsense. It reminded me of an article that I'd seen in the Daily Mail. Mathematicians created the formula for the perfect Christmas day in the UK. So what they did was they looked at some factors that typically they thought, in their opinion, would make Christmas not as happy. In other words, the use of mobile phones, use of games, the use of television, all these different things that keep people from interacting with each other. And they came up with a mathematical formula, which when you look at it, it reflects their values in a qualitative way. What they do is they have a ratio of the number of mobile phones and the number of games used in a house. So they look at a percentage ratio of how you're using this. They put that in the denominator because that's the more you use these things, the more your happiness is going to decline. So they're inversely proportional here. And then they raise it to the power of M, G, or Q that they call misery factors. Those are how your household is able to cope with that. Does it really stress out the adults or the kids or whatever to have people on games and mobile phones? Well, that's a subjective thing, isn't it? It's difficult to measure. And that's part of the problem. You know, you create these models, and part of it is it's very difficult to get the raw data to know exactly how this is going to be correlated. That's why you have people who do weather prediction. That's why they work so hard. So many of them. It was about 4 years ago that the meteorologist had their annual meeting here in Austin. And I went there to report on it. And you've got literally thousands of scientists all over the world have been working on models to try to predict weather. It's pretty unpredictable in most cases. They don't know the exact time, and they're continually working on it. Why? Because they come up with these factors, and they say, well, it's going to be proportional or to this, or it's going to be inversely proportional to that. But they don't know how to weight it, just like you're looking at this joke formula here. And really, the climate models are jokes. As Lord Monckton pointed out, it's a bad joke being played on us by the court jesters and the politicians to take over our lives. And so you look at these things. If you come up with something, you come up with some general rules. But then you have to be able to test it, don't you? And you have to say, well, when I weight it this amount, then I start to get the right answer. But, you know, you don't have anything as long as you just got some broad guidelines to it. And that's the problem. It's just as ridiculous as this formula looks at the relationship to mobile phones, to gaming, and the time before the Queen's speech, which I guess is a metric factor. We can disregard that here in the United States. I have no idea what that is all about on television. Evidently, she speaks. I don't know how that makes people happy or unhappy. I think that would take up my misery index considerably if I had to watch a Queen talk on Christmas. I think that would be the overriding factor, as a matter of fact, not when she speaks, but the fact that she is speaking and preempting the few channels that they have to watch. Here in America, the universities are now striving to eliminate Christmas on campus. At the University of California, Irvine, this is coming from Campus Reform, individual departments are encouraged to, quote, focus on celebrating a special occasion instead of a specific holiday. Oh, so it's an occasion, not a holiday. And at California, this California University, they say they're requesting academic departments ensure that office celebrations are not indirectly celebrating religious holidays. So don't even do it indirectly. Be very careful. So you must purge any religious aspects of it deliberately, because if you don't, it could be indirectly celebrating it. You know, the music that you listen to, oh, gee, you know, even if it's an instrumental version of a religious Christian song, that's got to be purged. They say keep decorations general and nonspecific to any religion. Create a winter theme with lights and color rather than religious icons, or include decorations from all the cultural traditions repressed in your department. So get out your Kwanzaa stuff, get out your Festivus stuff, you know, get your Festiva pole. Festivus for the rest of us. Life University is sponsoring a holiday decorating contest, but will judge participants on inclusiveness or how the decorations are respectful of all religious winter holidays. Eastern Connecticut's Public Liberal Arts University wants inclusive holiday decorating parties, and they're giving people tips for this. And then the University of Alabama student newspaper ran an editorial criticizing President Trump for bringing back a nativity scene to the White House grounds. They call the move disrespectful. Of course, they're also celebrating Hanukkah this week. You know, they do that. They celebrate different religious holidays because we have freedom of religion, not freedom from religion, that is mentioned in the Constitution. They say in the editorial of University of Alabama student paper, bringing back the nativity scene is a slap in the face to the remaining religions thriving within America. Placing the nativity scene on the grounds of the most important house in the United States is sending the message that their president forgets those who do not practice Christianity. And I'm sure that kid running that editorial in the university newspaper. I'm sure they'll snap him up in the first round draft pick at the Huffington Post or Slate or some other liberal garbage rag. In the UK, they're trying to keep out Billy Graham's son, Franklin Graham. They say opposition is mounting to a planned visit to the UK by leading American conservative evangelical Christian who has made Islamophobic and anti-gay statements, says The Guardian. In other words, he's reading the Bible to people without saying, forget this, this doesn't apply. And so the question is, how much longer is it going to be in the UK before they ban the Bible? Just like Saudi Arabia, I guess, when you fly into Britain, you'll have to go through customs and they'll search through your luggage like they do in Saudi Arabia and confiscate any Bibles that you've got going into the UK. But don't worry, because the Christians there, for the most part, aren't using the Bibles anyway. They're just decoration or paperweights or something. Nina Parker, a pastor of Liberty Church, said, as a Christian and a leader of a church that particularly welcomes LGBT people, I am horrified, and I would add intolerant of, someone who has Franklin Graham's record of hate speech. Yeah, she's intolerant of Christianity, but she's not intolerant of Islam. She said Graham's visit had triggered, always the word these, triggered an enormous amount of protest from Christians in the northwest of England. People like her, I guess. And people who do not want to tolerate difference, except when it comes to Islam. Islam, they're fine with. And she was upset. She said, and so did The Guardian, talk about the fact that Franklin Graham has said that Islam is an evil and very wicked religion. He's equated the actions of extremist groups such as ISIS with a faith. Who would confuse ISIS with Islam? I mean, that's absolutely absurd. H.R. McMaster can set you straight on that. We must not say that there's any connection with Islam and ISIS. That is absolutely false. H.R. McMaster knows much better. He said Barack Obama was born a Muslim. Well, he was certainly raised in Indonesia. And as the New York Times reported, when he began his campaign for presidency, he was able to recite and sing the Muslim chants and prayers perfectly. They thought it was a beautiful thing. Unfortunately, they didn't record it, or if they did, they never published the recording. And that he had allowed the Muslim Brotherhood to infiltrate the U.S. government at the highest levels during his presidency. You mean like Huma Abedin, whose mother was one of the founders of the Muslim Brotherhood, who had access to all Hillary Clinton's emails? You mean people like that? I mean, what a conspiracy theory that is. Or people like Valerie Jarrett, who was born in Iran because her parents, who are Americans, moved away because they hated America so much, so they moved to Iran. They liked the daily chants of death to America, raised their daughter there, and she became one of the high-ranking officials in the White House. But, of course, if you notice that, you get banned from the UK. Maybe they won't let me in. I don't know. If they're paying attention, they won't. I'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Stay with us. I'm David Knight. Before we get back to the news, we got Nancy Pelosi talking about DACA, and this, folks, is a real creepy video. It sounds like a cult chant that is going on, but let's not forget what is really coming down the pike and what this really means when she talks about pushing DACA. So we're going to have that video here for you in just 1 second. Before we do, I want to remind you of some of the sales we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We have 33% off DNA Force. That is a very big savings because that's a very expensive premium product to create. It's difficult to create, so sometimes we run out of it. We now have it in stock, and we have discounted it for the holidays, 33% off. That's DNA Force. We also have Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, 50% off. And we have all Super Blue fluoride-free toothpaste products and mouthwash products, all those are 50% off. It's a great time to give that a try if you haven't, or time to stock up on it. They don't have fluoride, but they do have iodine and they have nano silver, a great way to kill the bacteria in your mouth that creates gum disease, that leads to tooth loss and even heart disease. And I think once you try the Super Blue toothpaste. You're going to love it. I think it's the best toothpaste that I have ever used. Leaves my mouth feeling fresher than any other toothpaste I've ever used. So now it's a great time to try that. 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. Let's go to Nancy Pelosi. She's telling the Democrats, let's add DACA to the budget deal. And here's that clip.
The children, what are the three most important issues facing the Congress? Our children, our children, our children. Again, their health, education, the economic security of their families. Listen to the children. Support the children. Let's give a shout out.
The children.
The children. The children. The children.
Support the children. Oppose this legislation. Yeah. You know, that's Democrat politics 101. We have to do it for the children. The children, the children, the children. Chant with me, the children, the children, the children. That's what the village is all concerned about. It's the children. And she even goes on to say, God is with us on this. God is with us on this. This is the woman who is... this is the party of abortion. Just as the CDC is saying that one in three New York City babies is aborted, these are the people who are doing it for the children. When you have these children, if you don't abort them, you have them, they are going to tell you what you have to inject into them, and you're not going to have a choice about that. If the Democrats, like those in California, have any say, they will tell you what things to inject into your body, what things to inject into your children, and when to do it. You won't even have a choice about that, spreading that out. You won't have any choice about how to educate your children. And their children's choices are going to be shut down in terms of housing, transportation, economic opportunity. But it's all about the children, isn't it? That is the way that they always plead for increased regulations. The children, the children, the children. And then say they're therefore pro-choice when they oppose our choice in every aspect of our life except killing our children. The children, the children. All right, let's take a look at Saudi Arabia's new crown prince. He has been identified as the buyer of a record-breaking Da Vinci, which, interestingly enough, is a portrait of Jesus Christ. he paid $450 million for this Da Vinci portrait of Jesus. And this is the guy who, I've said this before, I said, if we're going to get involved in this area in politics, I don't think I would back the guy who seems to be so into retail therapy. When they had austerity programs before, and they cut back the universal basic income that they were giving the people in Saudi Arabia, yeah, it's something that's already been tried in Saudi Arabia. Pacifying the public, putting them on welfare, saying, we don't have any jobs for you to do because we got the foreigners coming in. They find the oil, they pump the oil, they refine the oil, they transport the oil, they use the oil. And then they give us the money and we'll let some of this stuff trickle down to you. That's the real trickle down economics, the universal basic income. If the liberals wanted to get upset about something, that's what they'd be upset about. And so they would put the people on welfare, but then they cut that. And people are starting to get upset about the austerity program. So he did some retail therapy for himself. He took a $500,000 vacation on the French Riviera. He bought a $500,000 yacht. And now, as things are starting to get hot again, he does some more retail therapy. And he buys a $450 million Da Vinci portrait of Jesus Christ, the guy who is kind of the Wahhabist head of Saudi Arabia. Because it's all about him. The image of the crown prince spending that much money to buy a painting when he is supposed to be leading an anti-corruption drive is staggering. Yes, absolutely. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in terms of the surges going back and forth about Bitcoin. I have an interesting clip from Jamie Dimon where he's talking about Bitcoin, and we've had Alan Greenspan jump into that as well. I think what the two of them have to say is very interesting. We need to think, and this is a great time to think about what bubbles we're seeing everywhere. You know, there's not just a bubble in Bitcoin. We have a bubble in pension plans. We have a bubble in real estate that is coming back. It's the real estate bubble 2.0, as some people have pointed out. We have a bubble in many aspects of our life, even in our dollar. This whole petrodollar thing that they created back in the 70s with Saudi Arabia and Henry Kissinger, that bubble may be about to burst. people are busy creating and sharpening pens to try to burst that bubble as well. So what does it mean when we talk about money? Is the fiat currency that Jamie Dimon and Alan Greenspan love so much, is that going to be here forever? Is that the only way that we can have a stable economy? Is that the only way that money can be created? Of course it isn't. Of course it isn't. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the madness of money and the delusion of governments in the next hour. But just one more story here. You know, we had so much political capital made out of the Puerto Rican disaster. And yes, it was a true disaster. It was a horrific disaster, exacerbated by the inaction of the local government. The local government that already had a lot of infrastructure problems in terms of delivering power to people. The local government that was blaming Trump as there were literally mountains of supplies standing behind the San Juan mayor. And she's criticizing President Trump. Her job is to take it the last mile of the way and get it to people. But she couldn't do that. They're on the ground. So I was like, what are you going to do? When are you going to send stuff to us? Well, it's right there behind you. See all those crates and pallets of stuff behind you? And you're not putting that out there with anybody. And I understand it was a difficult problem. The roads were destroyed. Much of it was impassable. You know, the governments are also in charge of building the roads as well as the power structure. So they hadn't done a very good job in terms of the infrastructure, whether it was roads or whether it was power delivery. And then they did not deliver the goods once they were delivered to Puerto Rico. But now we see this from Breitbart. Puerto Rico has paid its government employees $100 million in bonuses after asking for $94 billion in federal disaster aid. So say we want $94 billion and they spend for disaster, right? Except that they give it to the government employees. That plus another $6 billion to the government employees. They gave more than the federal disaster relief to their employees in terms of bonuses. That's the kind of corruption that we've come to expect. Steven Spielberg, of course, is now talking about how his new movie, The Post, going back to the fabled stories about Watergate and trying to build up, as one person put it, I thought it was genius. He said, yeah, The Washington Post, you know, that political blog of Jeff Bezos, that's what it is. It's his own personal political blog that he uses for political power. He bought it for what would just be a couple of dollars for you and I. You know, $250 million, but it was pocket change for Jeff Bezos. And it gives him a tremendous amount of leverage in Washington over people. Well, you can see how it's been used in the Alabama Senate race, for example. And so now Steven Spielberg is coming out with Meryl Streep and talking about how this movie, The Post, had to be made now. He says, everyone I know is afraid of Donald Trump. So this is going to be an attack piece on Donald Trump. Just as our government is going back, and the FBI, we're going to talk about that, the collusion between the Democrats and our government, as well as the media. That's what is now the story has turned into. It's not the Trump-Russian collusion. It's the Democrat-FBI, NSA-CIA collusion that you need to be concerned about. And the media, of course. And if you go back to Watergate, understand that they picked the name Deep Throat because the editor knew that it was the deep state. One guy who confessed to it, of course, it was a lot of people at the FBI who said, yeah, I was Deep Throat and I'm proud of it. He was the number two at the FBI. It's the deep state. That's what Deep Throat is, and it's still with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
In a world of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We have a third individual who says that he is going to resign from Congress this week. We've had Conyers come out. He didn't exactly say he was resigning. He said he was retiring. Maybe he's planning on staying until next year after the election. We have 2018 elections, and maybe he's going to stay till the new Congress is sworn in 2019. I mean, he's 88 years old. He's in the hospital right now. And then we had Al Franken, and have a poll up at Libertarian if you think that he's going or if he's staying or if he's just delaying this because he wants to go to the Christmas party. Half of the people think that he was not confessing to anything. Half the people think that he's just kind of delaying this action. Maybe he's planning on staying if Roy Moore wins because he tried to make that equivalence. He blamed Roy Moore. He blamed Donald Trump. And then he said, I remember these other events differently. Maybe he doesn't remember that photograph. So we have photographic evidence. It's more contemporary. And so I don't know. We'll see what happens with Franken, whether he's going to get out or not. But he hasn't resigned. He said he'll be doing it in the coming weeks. But he didn't resign, and he didn't admit doing anything wrong. Now we have a third individual, Congressman Trent Franks of Arizona. He said he's going to resign from Congress. He said that he discussed surrogacy with staffers. Now, this is really weird. He had discussed surrogacy with two female subordinates. He said, given the nature of numerous allegations, he said this yesterday in a statement, given the nature of numerous allegations and reports across America in recent weeks, I want to make one thing completely clear. I have absolutely never physically intimidated, coerced, or attempted to have any sexual contact with any member of my congressional staff. However, I do want to take full and personal responsibility for the ways I have broached a topic that, unbeknownst to me until very recently, made certain individuals uncomfortable. And so I want to shed light on how those conversations came about. And he said that he and his wife had long struggled with infertility. They had suffered three miscarriages. They'd had twins through a surrogate. But subsequent attempts to have another child by either adoption or another surrogate fell through. He said, due to my familiarity and experience with the process of surrogacy, I clearly became insensitive as to how the discussions of such an intensely personal topic might affect others. I mean, that sounds kind of like, besides being weird, it sounds like there was nothing there. But I'm sure if he's resigning, there had to be something more to it than that. I mean, have we gotten to the level of political correctness that you can't even talk about how you and your wife want to have kids? Maybe he's getting into details, specific details of things that are happening in that process that made them feel uncomfortable. I'm not really sure what's going on, but he's resigned now. And we'll take a look at some of the other news about what's going on in Congress later on the show. We also have Corrine Brown, an ex-congresswoman. She was running a sham charity. And even though she's 71 years old, and even though she's out of office, she's now getting a 5-year prison sentence for fraud. She used more than $300,000 in personal expenses that she had collected as part of that charity for NFL tickets and a Beyonce concert. So she is now going to jail for 5 years at the age of 71. There's a lot of corruption in Washington, but one of the things that they don't care about, they may take a congressman out for talking about the fact that he wants to have children through surrogacy. And again, I don't know exactly. We haven't heard a statement from the women as to what he said to them. I would imagine there's a bit more to it than what we just heard from this congressman if he's resigning. But one thing that seems to be okay, and although Drudge picked it up, nobody else has really talked about it in the mainstream media. It was Jerome Corsi's article from 2 days ago. Twitter allows death threats against the FCC chair, a PI, ahead of the net neutrality vote. So they're just fine with that. They're fine with very, very explicit, vicious, violent threats, death threats to this commissioner because of net neutrality. Twitter leaves it up. But if you're a congressman and you talk about surrogacy, you're going down. And I'm not saying that he shouldn't go down.
You found it. It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. In the next segment, we're going to be talking to Eric Peters, EP Autos. A couple of interesting things have happened in the last week or so. We have one of the Volkswagen executives who made the mistake of coming back to America after he had been part of a company that the EPA accused of cheating on a clean air standard. Nobody was injured. It isn't like the exploding airbags that are killing people that they won't let you take out or turn off. It isn't like the rolling SUVs that kill people or the exploding Pintos that kill people, but they're coming after them for billions of dollars, the biggest penalty we've ever seen. And now this individual who went to Florida, I guess he's going to Disney World or something, he went to Florida and they caught him. The rest of these guys, they better stay in Germany because they are wanted. Wanted by the FBI because they lied to the EPA. Just like, you know, you lie to the government. That is the only crime they seem to be interested in. Unless you're Hillary Clinton. Then they don't care. Hillary Clinton or Obama or Democrat, they don't care. That's the collusion between the Democrats and the government. But anybody else, if you lie to the government, that is the worst possible thing you could do. And so he's going to jail for 7 years. As he points out in this piece, this is a crucifixion of Oliver Schmidt. So we're going to talk to Eric Peters about that piece, as well as the new, as he puts it, the new fatwa on truckers that's going to begin on December the 18th. I want to talk a little bit about guns. We had the House pass a concealed carry bill this week. On Wednesday, they passed legislation that would allow people to use permits for carrying concealed handguns across state lines, while also boosting the background check system that is so badly broken. So we're going to do more of that. Maybe this time the government will put in people that work for them that shouldn't be allowed to even be out of prison, let alone buying guns. But we'll see what happens with that. It passed along party lines, 231 to 198, due to Democratic opposition to concealed carry reciprocity. In other words, if you're from a state like Texas, and you take a training class and you fill out all your paperwork and you beg the government as a good little citizen to let you protect yourself, even though it's your God-given right, then you go through all that, and in New Jersey, they still want to arrest you if you come through there. So they're saying, let's stop that. Let's stop that legal entrapment, places like New Jersey and Washington, D.C., and let's allow people to have reciprocity. If you go through all this training and permission, you should be allowed to carry this in other places, because they're constantly looking at that. And you had 6 Democrats who voted with the Republicans to prove this, but 14 Republicans went the other way. That's why you got to look beyond the union label when you decide who you're going to vote for. 14 Republicans voted against carry reciprocity. 6 Democrats voted for. And it still has to come up before the Senate. It's uncertain whether or not it will go through. And I tell you what, it will not go through if you get Doug Jones there. You can bet on it. This is going to be a clone of Chuck Schumer. You got Roy Moore, very, very polar opposite of Doug Jones in Alabama. And yesterday we had a shooting in a high school in Arizona, Aztec High School in Aztec, New Mexico. 2 students were killed. The suspected shooter is also dead. And you have the Democrat senator there, just as I was saying, Senator Martin Heinrich, Sieg Heil, a Democrat from New Mexico, enacting Nazi-type gun control. That's why I say Sieg Heil to Heinrich. Gun control, modern gun control, began with the Nazis. You don't want people having weapons to protect themselves from you. You know, when I've talked about this, I was with the Libertarian Party, I'd have... at one time I had a reporter engage me on it and say, you think that you're going to be able to stop a repressive government? You say that this is to keep government in check. You think with pistols you're going to be able to stop government? And I said, well, 1 or 2 pistols that were taken with people who had hammers in the Warsaw Ghetto pinned down a couple of divisions of German panzer tanks for quite a while before they completely burned down Warsaw. So, yeah, you go back and look at the Warsaw Uprising. And that shows you how difficult it can be, why the government is so concerned. If it wasn't effective, the government would say, sure, yeah, keep your firearms because we can just take you out any time. No, they're very effective against that. They don't want that to happen. And so this is what Martin Heinrich says as he is doing this, you know, for the children, for the children, for the children, as you heard Nancy Pelosi say, we got to do it for the children. He's saying every child deserves to be safe at school. Heinrich also called for action to address the, quote, epidemic of gun violence in America. He said, all of us should feel an urgency to take concrete action to address this disease. Oh, that's right, because they like to push this to the medical community to try to commit people to, you know, take away your medical care or to have doctors interview you about this. It's a disease. I refuse to give in to the feeling of helplessness, he said. I refuse as well. I refuse to let you put a feeling of helplessness on me, Senator Heinrich. He says, I will continue to seek common ground with my colleagues, my Democrats, in order to keep firearms out of the hands of those who need them for self-protection. No, he didn't say that. I said that. But he will work to keep them out of your hands. And so that brings me to the case that just happened outside of Atlanta. You had a situation where you had a Good Samaritan police officer in Dawson County, Georgia. And he sees a homeless man. This is on Tuesday. He offers to give him a ride to the gas station, which he does. And then, as we've seen before, many officers will, out of their own pocket, like in New York City, we've seen pictures of officers going up to a homeless man and buying him boots, giving them something to cover their feet because they've got bare feet. So you have Good Samaritan police officers like this. So this is a police sergeant in Dawson County, Georgia. He offers to give a homeless man a ride to the gas station to help him out with some cash. And then as he stops there, it got potentially deadly, they say, for the 52-year-old sergeant. The suspect suddenly started viciously attacking him after he's trying to give him money. So he gives him a ride. He starts to give him money, and the guy attacks him. And the guy is winning. And as he was suffering severe injuries to his face, a nearby woman witnessed the attack and got out of her car. She was legally carrying a handgun. One of those people that Senator Heinrich wants to take the guns out of their hands. She fired a single round, which made the suspect get off of the officer. That gets your attention. Then she aimed and fired another round at him, making him flee the scene. She hit the suspect at least one time. So evidently maybe she fired more than those two rounds. And then the sheriff said, I truly believe that she's a hero. He told Fox 5 Atlanta, he said, I believe that she potentially saved this officer's life. We don't know how far the suspect would have gone with the assault. And the interesting thing is, after this woman comes to the aid of the officer, and if this guy is taking out this police sergeant, severely wounding him, they're afraid that he might have overwhelmed him and killed him. Do you think that that woman would have been much help if she hadn't had a firearm? Of course not. That is the equalizer in these types of situations. After she shot him and after he's fleeing, several other bystanders then helped to detain the attacker until the other police arrived. And we see this all. That's what happened in Texas the attack at the church, right? The police can't be everywhere. The police cannot always even protect themselves, let alone you. That's why everyone needs to be able to have firearms. And most of us are law-abiding citizens, as you can see in this example. It wasn't just that lady who came to the aid of the police officer, but it was other people who subdued the guy and held him until the police could get there to arrest him. It's what Sheriff Clark says all the time. He says, hey, learn how to use a firearm responsibly, take the class, but understand we'll get there as soon as we can. We'll do everything we can to help you. We'll do everything we can to get the bad guy, but you're going to be on your own until we can get there because we can't be everywhere at once. And they can't even protect themselves in many of these instances. And I think most rational police officers, like Sheriff David Clark, want to have law-abiding citizens covering their back, as we saw here. And we'll talk about some of the other side of the equation. When we come back, we had a verdict today in the situation in Charleston, South Carolina. The black man who was shot in the back by the police officer as he was fleeing. He's now gotten 20 years in prison. We're going to talk about that and another very shocking incident of the abuse of force in Vegas. It goes in every direction, folks. So we're going to be right back. Stay with us. We're going to be talking to Eric Peters in the next segment.
They can't be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch no bandit run.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're going to be talking about truckers. Remember when it was the romance of the road, and it was a very popular thing, along with the CB radios kicked off by Smokey and the Bandit? They're under attack. They've got a fatwa, as our guest Eric Peters calls it. I think it's a great way to put it. There's a new federal fatwa going into effect against truckers on December the 18th. And Eric is going to explain to you what that's about and why that threatens you as well, because it all has to do with the way the government looks at all of us, not just the truckers, but all of us. First they came for the truckers, then they came for the taxi drivers, and they're coming for you as well. And it's not just your freedom to move about on the road. They're coming for everything. And this is the latest example of it. And so joining us now is Eric Peters. His website is EP Autos. It's a great place to read honest reviews, interesting reviews from a very different perspective on cars. He does not get into, as a matter of fact, when he criticizes the car companies, he had some of them pull the cars off because he's totally honest with these people. But he also looks at things from a liberty perspective. And sometimes he just writes about liberty and not even about cars. But that is a very important juncture of our liberty, our ability to move about. So joining us now is Eric Peters, epautos.com. Thank you for joining us, Eric.
Hi, David. Thanks for having me back.
Let's talk about this article you've got, Cowboys, Truckers, and Us. What do cowboys have to do with truckers?
Well, they're similar professions, or at least they used to be. It was a profession that appealed to independent people who liked to work on their own schedule and were free to work on their own schedule. And the only thing that mattered was that they delivered the goods, in the case of a cowboy, the cows, to where they needed to be on time. And the truckers, you know, it didn't matter what they did in between A and B, as long as they got that load where it needed to be when it was supposed to get there. So it was a very kind of a modern analog to the old-fashioned cowboy model.
That's right. Well, that was the 1800s. And you're talking about maybe the 1970s or whatever, you know, that we're looking at. But now we're in the 21st century. What is happening in the 21st century?
Well, you know, there's a saying that hard cases make bad law, which I'm sure you're familiar with. And, you know, there have been a couple of instances of irresponsible truckers who've gotten into accidents and have hurt and killed people. And so naturally the solution to that is to presume that every single guy who drives a truck is reckless and irresponsible and must be treated as a presumptive idiot.
And that's what we see everywhere, whether it is firearms or whether it's you take anything when somebody acts irresponsibly, even men, because we've got irresponsible actions from a bunch of Hollywood perverts and perverted congressmen. Now all men are guilty and must be watched all the time. And so this is what they're doing. They apply that same kind of logic and then talk about what their solution is, because it's always the same type of solution.
Right. And the solution in this case is to monitor truckers constantly. The fatwa, the mandate that's come out of the federal government requires that all new trucks be equipped with something called an electronic logging device after, I think it's the 18th of this month. And essentially, it monitors their driving and makes sure that they do not exceed the federal maximum amount of time that they're allowed to be behind the wheel, regardless of conditions, regardless of the status of the driver, where he happens to be. So if he's 3 miles from his house or 3 miles from the loading dock, and he exceeds that limit, well, he'd better shut down, because if he doesn't, the ELD will mark him out to the federal regulatory authorities, and he can lose his license to operate a commercial vehicle.
You know, as you put it, if he's been driving longer than allowed, he will be crucified, fined, perhaps sent to the clink, probably defrocked of his commercial driver's license. That's what he put. That's a great way to put it, which renders him effectively unemployed and unemployable as a trucker, regardless of how he actually drove.
And that's the key thing. You know, there are so many analogies that we could talk about. For example, the way they've dumbed down the drunk driving statutes to the point where even a trace amount of alcohol in one system is sufficient to be convicted of quote-unquote drunk driving, even if your actual driving can't be faulted.
And let me interject something here, too, because I think that that has had exactly the opposite effect. Just as you talked about, the metrics for corporate average fuel economy have had the exact opposite effect. When you talk about drunk driving and you take it down, continually take it down every year because of the demands of mothers against drunk drivers, then, as you point out, everybody kind of realizes throughout the system, it's like, oh, okay, well, you know, maybe they really weren't impaired in their driving because we've removed these, we've redefined drunk driving down to the extent that, you know, he's in here before me in front of the, in the court. And so that has created a kind of corruption, a kind of leniency towards people who actually were impaired in the past. So the courts, I think, are starting to become even more lenient with this. You've got people that they're letting off that would maybe in the past have been dealt with more harshly. But now they say drunk driving, well, I don't know. You know, that's we've really dumbed that definition down.
Well, sure, and fundamentally, shouldn't the issue be impairment, whether we're talking about drunk driving or trucking? You know, if you can establish that a person has handled a vehicle irresponsibly, negligently, recklessly, whether as the result of sleep deprivation, booze, or just because they're texting on their phone. Those things are really peripheral and immaterial, in my opinion. The fundamental thing is, did this person handle their car recklessly or negligently? And if they did, okay, fine. They should be held accountable for that. But if not, why are we punishing people who haven't done anything
other than
violate a statute?
That's right. And that is where we have the common cause with them. You point out that they're going to put basically a panopticon maintained at their expense in their car. So the government is going to watch them constantly, just as the government is going to watch us constantly. How do we have common cause with them?
Well, for exactly that reason. If it's good for the goose, naturally it's going to occur to some of these busybodies. Well, you know, there's certainly more cars on the road than there are trucks. And we should apply this same safety technology to the cars. Some of the car manufacturers, for example, are already working on passive alcohol detection technology, which basically means that, for example, if you touch the gear shift with your hand, the thing can sample your skin and sample your body chemistry. And if it detects any alcohol in your system, you know, it'll shut the car off, things like that. And some of the cars, of course, have telematics. They can send and receive. They could put microphones in cars. They could put video in cars. They already have these things in the cars. And,
yes.
You know, really it's just a question of flipping a switch or turning a key. And I know that sounds crazy, but if you think about the way things are headed in this country, we already have examples of this actually happening. And this business with the trucks is just one more example.
We talk about the over-the-top technology that is going to spy on you, sampling your breath, or even measuring your skin for alcohol content within your body as you touch the steering wheel or the gear shift lever. That is being put in by the automobile manufacturers. At the same time, you've got General Motors coming out with a thing called Marketplace, which would allow you to shop while you drive. I mean, how insane is that? Even the safety Nazis have complained about that when they don't have any problem with self-driving cars. They say, are you crazy? I saw that and I said to my wife, I said, this is the most insane thing I've ever seen. People are going to be sitting there shopping while they're driving, and the GM is encouraging that as the newest feature on their car.
Oh, it gets even better. They're going to use that as the vehicle for piping ads into your car. No kidding. So, you know, that they can insult
yeah.
you
oh, yeah.
with pushy ads while you're trying to control your car.
So you can watch television,
yep.
and you can shop while you drive. And that will be used to take the steering wheel out of our hands because we're foolish enough to buy a car that's got that kind of nonsense in it. Stay with us. We're going to be right back. We're going to be talking to Eric Peters about the crucifixion of a corporate executive who did no one any harm, but he created the essential crime. He deceived the government in a bureaucratic way. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Eric Peters. He's an automotive journalist, but he's also somebody who cares about liberty. And his website, EP Autos, is not only automobile reviews, in-depth automobile reviews, but he also covers politics from a libertarian perspective. We've just been talking to Eric Peters about his article, Cowboys, Truckers, and Us. First, they came for the cowboys. We've been talking about what happened with the Bundys as they tried to assert that they actually had property rights that they had even before Utah or Nevada became a state. But no, can't have that. We're going to come after the cowboys. We're not going to give them a fair trial. We're going to come after the loggers, the miners, the truckers is who they're coming after. December 18th, there's going to be a new electronic logging device mandate. It's going to be a panopticon. It's going to look at everything that they do. And Eric, as you're pointing out, this is coming to all of us. But you know what? It's already come in England.
Yeah.
I've read articles there about how difficult it is for young people to get insurance. So they don't have a lot of money. They're just starting out in life. And they have so many regulations. They have a black box that the insurance companies, that the insurance is so expensive that the only way that they can afford to drive is if they share a car with a sibling and they get a black box put in and it measures how fast they drive, how fast they stop, how fast they accelerate. It measures how many miles they drive, just like these truckers are already measuring how many miles, and then they adjust the insurance for that. And if you do more than that, then it gets so expensive that you won't be able to afford it. And that's where we're headed here in America. That same type of control that is already being put on by the insurance companies in the UK is coming to America, just as it's now starting with the truckers.
They are doing everything possible, it seems, to make cars and driving expensive and unpleasant, and to alienate particularly young people from driving so that they'll be more amenable to this whole business of getting into some automated module that they'll pay a fee to be taken from A to B.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I call them vomit boxes because they're not going to be owned by us. They're going to be like taxis, except if somebody gets in one of them and throws up, there isn't going to be any taxi driver to say, hey, let's get this thing cleaned up. It's just as automated. So it just goes on to the next person there, and they get in the car. But they're going to try to milk people with fines as much as they can so that you can't afford to do it. And you're only going to have a few people like Toad of Toad Hall who will be able to afford this and take his wild ride. And then they'll ban those people eventually.
Yeah, the insurance mafia in this country is champing at the bit to have devices like that put into vehicles as well by mandate. Right now, it's voluntary. You've probably seen those ads from Progressive, and God, I hate that name.
Yes, that's what they are. They're progressives, aren't they?
Yeah, and they want you to put this thing in your car, and you know, you get something ridiculous like a $30 every 6 month discount on your policy in return for surrendering all your privacy to to the insurance mafia.
And measuring everything that you do, I'm sure that they're going to be cooperating with the police to tell them that because they got a GPS on the thing, they can easily look at what the speed limit is. I mean, you're driving along with any of the map apps, you know that they know what the speed limit is on a particular section of road. So they just report that, send that on to the police, or maybe they just do it instantaneously because one of the boxes that they're mandating on us on passenger cars are the talking car boxes, the vehicle-to-vehicle communications or the vehicle-to-infrastructure communications. And they're saying, well, it's got a good use because vehicles can, if they see something on the road, they can warn the vehicle behind them of something that is coming up. But they're also going to be talking to the infrastructure about you, about how you're driving in every respect.
Right, and they're going to end up mandating that because the automated vehicles have to have that in order for them to be functionally viable. And by the way, a semantic point, every time I read an article or I hear a conversation about these vehicles, they're referred to as autonomous. And they're the farthest thing from autonomous. Autonomy means independent. It means it's controlled by you. These are automated cars, and they're not controlled by you. They're controlled by the government corporate nexus.
Yes, yes, yes. They're little government taxis or robo-cars, I like to call them, because it kind of conjures up the image of Johnny Cab from Total Recall. I think that's the appropriate image.
Predictive.
Yes, yes, exactly. And let's talk about this other situation here, because I think it actually has some parallels to what's going on with Michael Flynn.
Yes,
Hillary Clinton said when she was going to be deposed by the FBI, it may not be a serious crime, but the most serious crime you commit sometimes is to not give an accurate answer to the FBI when they're asking. Now we see that being used against Michael Flynn. Of course, she had the private tete-a-tete with her husband and the attorney general to make sure that she was going to give the appropriate answers, what the FBI knew, I think. But it didn't happen that way with Michael Flynn. They caught him by surprise. And now we've got a Volkswagen executive, Oliver Schmidt, who has been sentenced to 7 years in jail, $400,000. Talk about that.
Well, this is the VW executive who headed the emissions department of Volkswagen and stands convicted essentially of affronting the government. The government did not have to prove that anybody was actually harmed, not even a single person. They simply had to prove that Volkswagen end-run ran around and evaded some of these arbitrary fatwas that come out of the EPA with regard to tailpipe exhaust emissions. So VW programmed its cars to pass the government's test. They emit fractionally more of a compound called oxides of nitrogen than the law allows. And for that, Oliver Schmidt is going to spend 7 years in federal prison and has his life ruined.
That's amazing. And, of course, Volkswagen has been fined $4.3 billion. I've had you on before, and you talked about the parallels. Talk about how different that is versus the exploding Pintos, what happened with that, or the tipping SUVs, or even the recent and ongoing Takata airbag situations, things that have actually killed people.
Well, that's right. It's very interesting that when the regulatory state issues a fatwa that actually results in actual people being actually harmed, Nobody goes to jail. Nobody's fined. Nobody's held accountable. Joan Claybrook, Ralph Nader, who were key in imposing the airbag mandate on the car industry and thus on all of us, arguably they're responsible for all the people who've been killed and maimed by airbags, both defective and functioning as designed. Not just the defective ones, but the ones that operated as they were designed to operate, because they're inherently dangerous.
That's right.
Yet Joan Claybrook and Ralph Nader never received so much as a fine for the harm.
When they first rolled these things out, you're talking about operating as designed. They were designed for average-sized men. And when you had women and children who were much smaller than the men, they were killing them. And they said, and they argued for the longest time, no, I'm sorry, that's the way they're designed, and we're not going to let you turn that off. They always talk about, oh, we got to do this for the children. I was just talking about Nancy Pelosi saying, we got to do this for the children, leading a really creepy chant, for the children, for the children. But you can't turn off that airbag for your children. It took a long time for them to put those cutoff switches that we now have in our cars. They absolutely put their foot down and refused to do that to spare the children.
Yeah, well, they're still doing it. There are literally millions, no exaggeration, millions of vehicles on the road right now with known to be defective, known to be potentially lethal airbags in them that are subject to this massive recall, the Takata recall. And it's going to take the dealers and the manufacturers years to get through the backlog of millions of cars and retrofit them with non-defective airbag components. In the meanwhile, lots of people would like to have these things at least temporarily disabled, you know, to have a have an off switch put in the car, something, some way for them to disable them so that they can drive their cars without fear of having their faces smashed in. But the government won't permit that.
Or it's like having a small fragment bomb go off on your face, and some kind of it hits a metal particle, some of these defective ones.
Even though
they're on the list to have a recall, while they're waiting for the recall, even they can't get these taken out and disabled.
That's correct. And now if you turn that around and imagine that there was a manufacturer defect, something that wasn't mandated, let's say a car was built and it had a problem that could result in people being killed, someone would get crucified for that.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. It's just absolutely amazing when we look at what is continuing to go on, and we look at the fact that he's going to jail now for 7 years. You know, Eric, it was Lisa Jackson and now Senator Markey. He was a congressman at the time, and it was about the time I started working here at InfoWars. They had a dog and pony show on Capitol Hill saying more people were dying of fine particulate matter from diesel fuel than were dying of cancer. Mm-hmm. She lied to the American people. She has cost us billions of dollars. And now this man is being sent to jail for 7 years. His lie isn't nearly as bad as the lie that she told us. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're talking to Eric Peters. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're talking to Eric Peters. Before we get back to Eric, I just want to remind you of some of the sales that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We now have 33% off DNA Force, one of our premier products, a very difficult and expensive product to make. We frequently run out of it, and it is a big savings to get that at 33% off. We also have at InfoWarsStore.com 50% off of Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, a great way to get your multivitamins as well as minerals, essential minerals, in an easy-to-take drink formula. So it's great tasting. You can make it taste any way you want, of course. Mix it to your taste with fruit juices, other things, and you don't have to take a lot of pills to get your multivitamins and minerals. That's now 50% off Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix at InfoWarsStore.com. And we also have all of the Super Blue fluoride-free toothpaste and mouthwash products, 50% off. A great time to try those. I guarantee if you try the Super Blue toothpaste, you're going to find that to be the best toothpaste you've ever used. It's got not fluoride, but it's got iodine and it's got nano silver, which fights bacteria in your mouth that can lead to gum disease, tooth loss, and even heart disease. A great time to give that a try or to stock up on it. Super Blue fluoride-free toothpaste and mouthwash, 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. Eric, you know, when we look at what is happening with us, and as I said before, we were going to the break, the lies that were told by the EPA administrators and the politicians, but of course, if they can catch you in a lie, you're going to get draconian treatment. The other executives from Volkswagen, the articles looking at it from The Guardian say they're staying out of America. This guy, they nabbed him when he went to Florida for a vacation. The rest of them are not going to be coming to the U.S. And, of course, the German government isn't going to extradite these people because there really isn't a crime that was committed here.
No. And, you know, that ancient standard that a crime properly defined had to have a victim. And in this case, there is no victim. We're talking about affronting the regulatory state. And there's another angle to this that I think is very interesting, and I find the argument persuasive, and it is simply this. Volkswagen's diesels were so good that they represented a very real threat to this electric car onslaught that's being forced down our throats.
Absolutely. If you look at the carbon footprint, let's say, the car, as they like to term it, if you look at the big picture in India and in China, in India, you only have to have an internal combustion engine that is gets 34 miles per gallon before it equals what an electric car gets there. Because as we said before, it's an external combustion engine. The carbon is made at the power plant that generates the electricity.
Yep.
And when you look at the total picture of what it takes, and in India and China, they have very dirty power plants there, and they were going to be allowed, if we had stayed in the Paris Climate Agreement, they were going to be allowed to continue to expand the number of plants that they had at an amazing rate. So clearly that was never about containing carbon dioxide emission or containing carbon. They were going to let India and China continue to build those plants, and their plants were so dirty, are so dirty, that you only have to get about 33, 34 miles per gallon to equal that. And that's what they don't want anybody to see. So if you look at a diesel car, even in America, it was in the mid-50s. So the Volkswagen diesels were doing as well as even a clean power plant here in the United States, plus an electric car. And they're very durable. They're going to last. And, of course, that's not going to be the case with an electric car and its batteries.
They're also very affordable, and that's a very critical thing. You know, despite all the talk about these electric cars, very few people are buying them simply because they are so expensive. Even heavily subsidized, the least expensive of them are $30,000 and more. Contrast that with, for example, a Volkswagen Jetta TDI. You could buy that when it was still available. Sticker price, about $21,000.
Yeah, yeah.
And
well, and again, in the UK, they're putting on heavy taxes. They're even increasing, Eric, the parking fees for diesel cars in some jurisdictions. I mean, they're not even running, and they put an extra tax on them when they're just sitting there.
Here's an aspect of this that not many people know about. Before this whole scandal, and I put that in air quotes, broke, Volkswagen was working on a diesel, and they were going to produce it. And this diesel got up to 100 miles per gallon.
That's right.
You know, they were going to sell that in the European market and then potentially bring it here. And that really would have made it difficult to make any kind of argument on a functional or economic level for these electric cars.
You hit the nail on the head. That's why they needed the $4.3 billion fine against Volkswagen. They were saying, if you build an internal combustion engine that is far more efficient than our electric vehicles plus power plants, we're going to put you out of business. And they came pretty close to doing it. And immediately Volkswagen came back and said, all right, we're stopping diesels. We're not going to put any into the U.S. And we're going to make a electric Volkswagen Bug, an electric hippie van, and they immediately came on the market with those things.
Yep, they've been taken to Room 101, you know, from Orwell's novel.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah, I kind of find it interesting. You know, they, like you said, they were going to come up with 100 mile per gallon diesel. They could easily do that. We've seen, even at the recent auto show in L.A., we saw Nissan. They're saying they had a big improvement to the internal combustion engine. Mazda's not giving up on it. They came up with a hybrid that is part... it's a gasoline engine, but at a certain point, it begins to operate like a diesel engine. That's always been the holy grail. They were able to solve these technical problems, and you've got Nissan, and you've got Mazda out there, and even Volkswagen saying, hey, we can fix this. Volkswagen now has the understanding that this is not a technological issue. This is not about clean air. This is politics, and they got the message loud and clear. The Japanese are still out there saying, we can solve these problems.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's sad. They have a very kind of naive attitude. They really think that, oh, well, we're really just talking about clean air here. But no, we're not talking about that. We're talking about putting a boot on the face of internal combustion, because we can't allow the little people out there to have control of their ability to go from A to B. That's fundamentally what the issue is here.
And the people in California are moving in that direction. We've got a Democrat, California Assemblyman Phil Ting, is now trying to put together a bill that will outlaw internal combustion engines by 2040.
Mm-hmm. And even though that sounds like a long time down the road, it's actually not, because the car companies have to make their future plans today. They have to start thinking about what are we going to invest in terms of the vehicles that are going to be out on the road in 10 or 15 years. And if a huge market, a huge state like California tells them, well, you know, you're not going to be able to sell internal combustion engines in our state, which is a major market for them, what are they going to do? Well, they're not going to invest in,
that's right,
in internal.
So you can shut down all those technological projects, those engineering projects that are going to increase the fuel economy by 30-40%. No. We're not even going to allow you to sell that, even if you make something that is cleaner in the overall cycle, because they're saying, well, they're going to have zero emissions. Well, the emissions are going to be coming from the power plants. I even had a guy send me an email and said, why don't you suggest to them that maybe the way we could solve this is to let us have internal combustion engines. We can put a big balloon on the tailpipe, and we can drive it around until it gets full, and then we can go to the power plants and release it there, because they seem to be okay with that.
That's hilarious. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, my suspicion is that they won't be okay with it. I think this is all a shuck and jive.
No.
Let's say they manage to force feed the electric cars on the market. Then all of a sudden, they're going to notice that all these emissions that they're worried about are coming out of the very utility plants that power the electric cars, and then they'll shut those down.
Yes, yes. And of course, they've already tried to do that as well. I've got a section coming up here on Bitcoin, the back and forth between Bitcoin and between money and everything. The bottom line in one of these articles, the guy sums it up, I think, perfectly. And it applies to this as well, because all these issues are ultimately about our freedom, and they're about government control. And he said, good ideas don't require force.
Exactly.
Bad ideas require force. And that should make us very worried about where this is going, because they're going to use force to dictate to us when and where and what we can drive.
That's exactly right. You know, if these electric cars were competitive on the merits, if they were economically superior, if they were functionally superior, people would buy them.
Yes.
But people aren't buying them precisely because they're not.
Nobody had to ban buggy whips. They went away when they came up with something that was far better. But it ultimately boils down, Eric, and we've said this every time we talk about this, it ultimately boils down to them controlling your movements. That's what this is truly about. They want to be able to contain you. That's why they want to control transportation. They want your dependence on them, and they want to be able to confine you to the cities, confine the way that you're going to be able to move around.
Yep, and it's becoming very obvious. It used to be more subtle. I think now, if you don't see it, you're blind.
Yes, yes. That's why people need to wake up. We need to understand where this is headed before they enact their, as you put it so accurately, their fatwas on us, on other truckers, because it is coming and it is accelerating. And that's the only hope, you know, the old boiling frogs analogy, that they are turning up the water and we can really feel the heat now. And if you're not feeling the heat, you're not paying attention, and you don't understand where they're taking us with these controls that they're putting on us. The people who are running this whole thing are the urban planners. They think that cities are great, cars are awful, but it was the car that allowed us to escape the city. That was the thing that we liked about it in the middle of the 20th century. All right, thank you for joining us, Eric Peters. And you can find his great essays on liberty, observations, as well as his awesome car reviews at epautos.com. Thank you for joining us, Eric.
David, appreciate it.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. In the next hour, we're going to be talking about the FBI director, McCabe, who took the place of Comey, and he was the deputy FBI director at the time, and he told agents to lie about the Benghazi investigations. This is coming from Republican lawmaker DeSantis, who said that he spoke to a whistleblower who was very disturbed. He said, I see the information that's coming out here, and I've got to come forward with this because I think this is part of a bigger cover-up. This is the story, folks. It is the Democrat collusion with the deep state. It's not the Republican campaign's collusion with Russians. They've been looking and looking, and there is nothing there. Even people like Dianne Feinstein has said that. The real story is the collusion between the upper levels of law enforcement and the surveillance state and the Democrat Party. And that is beginning to come out now. We've got another individual. His name is Orr, a Justice Department official, a senior Justice Department official, has been demoted. Up until Wednesday, he was Associate Deputy Attorney General at the Department of Justice, but it was things that he was doing, and get this, during the campaign. Remember how a week ago they got so excited about the fake news about the meeting with Russians during the campaign? That was the big deal. Oh, it was during the campaign. So it wasn't a crime when Flynn met with the Russian ambassador 2 weeks before the inauguration, 2 months after the election. That wasn't a crime. But it would have been more, and it would have been a crime, actually, if he had met with him during the campaign. But it would have given some traction to their phony story about Russian collusion. But this happened during the campaign. And this is a government official being involved in a political campaign. That's actually against the law. There is a law against that. A campaign, as Alan Dershowitz has pointed out in his book, Trumped Up. He said, this is something that may destroy somebody politically. If this were to be found out, if there was collusion or whatever, that might destroy the candidate politically, but there's not any law here that was violated. There is no law that was violated. But there is a law if you are an official in law enforcement and the surveillance state, if you're breaking the laws against unmasking individuals, if you're breaking laws on surveillance, if you're getting involved in politics, those are laws that have been broken. And now we're starting to see this being uncovered. It is starting to accelerate. Though we can talk a lot about the individuals who are pointing the finger at congressmen and senators about sexual harassment, and that's real. And that's happening. And just as we're seeing that start to gain traction, now we see honest people in law enforcement, honest people at the FBI or whistleblowers in the surveillance state pointing out, hey, this is what happened. I didn't like it when it happened, but I couldn't do anything about it because all the guys at the top were corrupt and in bed with the Democrat Party. And now we need to expose this and change this. We should not be politicizing law enforcement. We should not be giving the tools of surveillance to anybody that we've got right now, quite frankly, is my opinion. But if you even support that, you've got to understand that it should not be politicized like that. I even pointed out yesterday that President Trump is so concerned about this that he is talking about having his own private spies. Eric Prince, formerly of Blackwater, is talking about that. It's a report from The Intercept saying he's organizing people to try to protect himself from the deep state. They're so politicized. They're so corrupt. He has to hire his own private spies. So we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about some pedophile ring updates. Yeah, everybody's talking about sexual assault on Capitol Hill, and that is important. However, why aren't they talking about the pedophile issues? I see officials that are getting long jail sentences, as they should, for having child pornography. And yet, why would somebody go to jail for 60 years for child pornography, but they can actually sexually abuse children and not go to jail at all because we have a statute of limitations of 3 years? That's the insanity. But there's a reason for that. There's a reason for that, and we know it. People like Dennis Hastert. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're also going to talk about Bitcoin.
It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. Got a lot of topics to go over this hour. There's a new threat of genetic biowarfare, and DARPA and the Jason scientists are a part of this. And if you've... we've had as a guest, Alex has talked to Annie Jacobson. Her book, The Pentagon's Brain, goes through the history of the Jason scientists. And we're going to be talking about that and something that is incredibly frightening that is just now coming to light based on FOIA requests. We're also going to talk about Bitcoin, what's happened in the last couple of days, and comments from Alan Greenspan on the basis of money. We need to think about that. We need to think about bubbles. You know, there's, yeah, Bitcoin has got a lot of volatility, a lot of speculation on top of the idea of having a currency that is not run by central banks, that is not a fiat currency run by governments. And so that is an interesting idea, something that needs to be thought about. But there's also the bubble aspect. We saw it go up really high yesterday, actually took down the biggest exchange here in the U.S., Coinbase, got clogged. They couldn't take any, nobody could log on to it for a while. It wasn't a DDoS. It was actually just a lot of people getting on trying to buy. Same thing can happen on the way down. You know, you can have your money in an asset, and you try to get it out, and it's crashing, and you may not even be able to log on. So there's a lot of volatility in that, but it's not the only bubble. We have a pension plan bubble. We have a real estate bubble. We have a U.S. dollar, petrodollar bubble. There's a lot of things that could financially go wrong. And so I want to talk about all of those and how they all feed into the extraordinary popular delusions and the madness of crowds, as McKay talked about. Everybody wants to talk about the tulip bubble. It's become this trope that I am so sick and tired of hearing about. Every time somebody talks about the tulip, Bitcoin, they talk about, oh, the tulip bubble of the 1600s. It's like, we had a real estate bubble just 10 years ago. You don't want to talk about that, do you? And there were a lot of bubbles that he talked about at the time besides the tulip bubble. There were other business issues. And, of course, he also talked about the crusades and witch hunts, like the one we've got going on right now in Washington against President Trump. That's a popular delusion. This whole Russian thing is a popular delusion. I'll tell you what is not a popular delusion. It's not popular with the Democrats to talk about Democrat collusion with the federal government and law enforcement. Well, we're going to talk about that as well as genetic warfare, Bitcoin, and other issues. But I want to finish up before we move on to those subjects with what we're talking about before Eric Peters joined us. We were talking about the shooting, the call for gun control, the fact that a lady in just outside of Atlanta saved a police officer's life, and the crowd also helped that did not have a gun. But it was a lady who had a gun, a woman with a gun, was able to get this guy off the Good Samaritan cop who had picked up a homeless person, that given him a ride, and was then giving him money out of his own pocket. And the guy nearly killed the cop. And the reason he didn't kill the cop was because of the lady with the gun. But, of course, the Democrats don't want that to happen. So there's that alliance there between law-abiding citizens and the law officers. But sometimes it goes wrong in the other way. And we've got a couple of incidents that today, you know, when we talk about gun control, we need to also talk about control of law enforcement. Law enforcement should be accountable, just as the Attorney General or the director of the FBI, or the director of the CIA, the NSA, they should be accountable to the public. There should be transparency. When they do wrong, they should go to jail, even if they're somebody like Hillary Clinton, or if they're the local police officer. So when we look at the double standard for people, it's very important, as Frank Serpico said, is that every institution must be constantly purging out the bad actors. Every institution is going to have human people in it. When you got people in, whether you're talking about police departments or the FBI, or you're talking about somebody running for office, you're going to have bad individuals there. The question is the institution going to purge those bad individuals, or is it going to protect them? If it protects the bad individuals, then it becomes corrupt itself. And that's what we cannot allow to have happen. That's why it is so important that we follow the rule of law. When we have situations, as we talked about yesterday, the Bundy trial, when due process of people like the Bundys or due process of people like Ross Ulbricht is with Silk Road is denied, and when the government rigs those trials, we should all be worried about that, regardless of what we feel about the particular things that are being looked at. Whether or not we agree with the laws or whatever, we need to agree that we need to have due process. If we don't have due process, even when we're dealing with terrorists, if we don't have due process, then what we do is we wind up turning the government into terrorists. We turn the government into criminals, and they are the most dangerous of criminals, the most dangerous of terrorists. And so when we come up, we're going to talk about the FBI Deputy Director, McCabe, now is being told, do not call, he told agents working underneath him, do not call the Benghazi attack an act of terror. This is the cover-up that was happening there. And we just saw the guy that they did not do the right kind of process with him. They wanted to pretend make a show trial to say, oh, see, we have a due process in the United States. We're going to bring this guy back and give him a criminal trial. Well, that was not the time or the way to apply that. That was simply a show trial by the Obama administration, dumping a hot potato in the lap of the Trump administration, if you will. This is a guy, Barack Obama and his administration, who never applied the rule of law to all these people that they railroaded. And then they give this terrorist, presumed to give him a trial when they could not conduct an investigation. So that was a travesty. It was a show trial. But let's take a look at something that is just broken out here. A former Arizona police officer was found guilty yesterday of a 2016 fatal shooting of an unarmed man outside of his hotel room as video of the moment has finally been released. So this is something that happened. He was found not guilty, and then they released this. Look at what happens. I'll narrate this for the people listening. Run that video.
You do that again, we're shooting you. Do you understand?
Please do not shoot me.
Then listen to my instruction.
I'm trying to just do what
you... Don't talk! Listen! Hands straight up in the air. Do not put your hands down for any reason. You think you're going to fall, you better fall on your face. Your hands go back in the small of your back or down. We are going to shoot you. Do you understand me?
Yes, sir.
Crawl towards me. Crawl towards me!
Yes, sir.
He's complying with what the officer said. Unbelievable.
Get a bomb.
That is unbelievable. Now, what this is an individual, 26-year-old father of two. His name is Daniel Shaver. He's from Granbury, Texas. He was traveling. He was in a hotel. There was a call from somebody in the hotel that somebody was pointing a gun out of a window at a La Quinta hotel. The officer gets there. The officer is obviously distraught, not in charge of his emotions, acting in a very authoritarian manner. The man is down on his hands and knees, as you heard that. He has his hands up behind his head. He tells him, you get down on your hands and knees, you crawl toward me. He's complying with that, and he is crying and whimpering, don't kill me, don't kill me. And as he's crawling on his hands and knees towards the officer shoots him and kills him. How in the world do we have a justice system that finds a police officer not guilty of that? How in the world can you not be found guilty of cold-blooded murder in that particular case? I just don't understand it. I just don't understand it. Now, that, folks, was a white man. That was a white man that was killed, a white father of two. And, of course, today we have now had the cop who killed Walter Scott, the black man in Charleston, South Carolina. He's pled guilty in a shooting death. He will be getting 20 years in prison. Attorneys said that he shot former police officer said he shot the 50-year-old Walter Scott in self-defense after the two fought and Scott grabbed his stun gun. Nevertheless, this individual recorded he was running away, even if there had been an altercation. If you take a class in terms of concealed carry, one of the things that you learn is you do not have a right to kill somebody if they are no threat to you. There was no threat to him. As the man was running away, he might have been a criminal who needed to be apprehended. There was no authorization for him to kill him. We'll be right back.
Chains shall he break, for the slave is our brother, and in his name all the
welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're going to move on to Bitcoin, but I just have another couple of things to say about these shootings that I see here. As I was saying about this case of the black man, Walter Scott, who was killed by police officer Michael Slager in Charleston, South Carolina. He was found, he wasn't found not guilty. It was a deadlocked jury. So the judge declared a mistrial. Presumably, they would have come after him again. I don't know. They don't have to. They can up to three different times. As you see there, he's running away. He is shot and killed in the back. Shot in the back and killed. When you look at that and you understand, if you've taken a class in concealed carry, they tell you on what circumstances you can use the gun and which ones you legally can't. If somebody breaks into your house and they're coming after you, they are a legitimate threat to you. and you can defend yourself. The stand your ground laws or whatever. So called in Florida and other places. But if they come in, even if they've grabbed your new expensive television set that you waited in line at Black Friday to get, and they're running out with that television set, you're not allowed to shoot them in the back. You're not allowed to use lethal force to stop a robber who is no threat to you. And those same rules need to apply to the police. We are not your slaves. And we do not have to be executed if we don't follow your rules, or even if we do follow your rules and crawl towards you on our hands and knees. You still do not have the right to execute us. And yet we have people in juries who pretend that that case, that they do. And that's a big problem. The idiots that they put on juries, the fact that they're not only not fully informed, they're not fully informed of what juries are there for. Juries are there to not only look at the facts of a case, but they are also there to determine whether or not they like the law or how the law is going to be applied or what the penalties for the law are. And they are within their rights, even if the person broke that law, to find them not guilty, to nullify that law. And that happened all the time with laws against going to a particular church, for example. That's how that started, William Penn and his people. That's how jury nullification began. It was an unjust law. There was no question that they were holding an illegal church meeting. And the judge said, well, all right, you know, the jury lets them go. And the judge says, all right, I'm going to throw you, the foreman of the jury, Ed Bushnell, and the co-foreman, I'm going to throw you in jail. And he did. And after they were in jail for quite some time, some lawyer came up and said, show us the law that they violated. And he said, okay, there is no law against a jury exercising their conscience. And so that established habeas corpus, but it also established fully informed juries, which now we have the legal system lying to us about and saying, no, you don't have a right to judge the law. You're just there as a referee. No, it's exactly the opposite. The judge is there as a referee. It's the jury that is supposed to decide whether or not they agree with the laws. But when we look at the rules that are being applied now and the way this is a plague that has been inflicted on our country, and I think it's come from the top down. It's come from Washington and other places. We had in New Mexico, a guy who was a police instructor at the State Police Academy said, I will not teach this new curriculum. This is a shoot-to-kill curriculum. I'm not going to teach that. See, police used to not do this. To shoot this guy when he is crawling towards them, they said, well, he pulled up one hand, looked like, he's going to adjust his pants or something. I was afraid he had a gun in there. So I shot him, and I kept shooting until he was dead. You can't do that. We can't accept that. We cannot accept that. The juries cannot accept that, and our society cannot accept that. And I've given you two egregious cases of this. One man was white, one man was black, and they make this about race. Black Lives Matter wants this to be about race. It is about oppression. It is about the abuse of power. It is about a government that is unaccountable to the people, and unless we stop that, we are going to have a revolution in this country, and it may not just come from the black people, but they want it to be a civil war. So they've told black people, this is only about race. No, it isn't. No, it isn't. It is about the abuse of power. And we need to make sure that for their own good and for our good, that the police follow the law. And they are not to shoot people who are no threat to them. And they're not to keep shooting until they have emptied their gun and killed everybody around them if they're afraid. If they're that kind of Barney Fife, they don't belong in the police department. You want to have background checks for firearm owners? Why don't you put background checks on police officers and make sure that they aren't fearful? Make sure that they have the ability to handle the situation both physically and psychologically without killing everybody around them if they get freaked out about something. How about that? How about some background checks for the police officers? How about some background checks for the juries that let these guys off? That's the thing I can't believe. I can't believe they'd do that. And that's the basic foundation of when you have a firearm. You do not shoot to kill people, and you do not shoot when people are no threat to you. And that law should apply to the police as well. We are not your slaves. We will not be your slaves. I just every time I see this, it just makes my blood boil. I can't. Let's move on to finances. Get off of this stuff. Bitcoin yesterday even took down the exchanges as it went briefly up to $18,000 or $19,000. It varies depending on different places that you're going. Next week, Goldman Sachs will begin clearing Bitcoin futures. So that's going to have some effect on the value of this. Gold has been battered as Bitcoin has gone crazy. Understand that some of these individuals have said, yeah, if it's this volatile, people aren't going to be using it as a currency the way it was originally designed to be used. They're going to be using it like they use gold, as a store of value. And that's why it is taking some of the wind out of the sails of gold itself. And when we look at the fact that it's going to be used as futures, I'm concerned about that as well in terms of volatility, what we're going to see. And I know that most people in America are not really that heavily invested in it. The people who are really heavily invested in it are people in Japan and in South Korea. But we've had Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan jump in on this on a couple of occasions. He talked about this, I guess it was back in August or September, and he said, oh, it's a fraud. It's a total fraud. And when he said that, and another fund manager said that at the same time, hedge fund manager, Bitcoin lost about 25% of its value, went from 4,000 to 3,000. Of course, now it's trading up around 15,000 this morning when I last, as I was preparing for the news. And it quickly recovered that value. But he was asked again in the middle of October, and I thought it'd be interesting because he had some interesting comments, and so did former Fed Chair Alan Greenspan, had some interesting comments about Bitcoin as well as money. So I want to play what Jamie Dimon had to say. Let's roll that first clip.
The blockchain is a technology, which is a good technology. We actually use it. It will be used for a lot of different things. God bless the blockchain. Cryptocurrencies and digital currencies, you know, I think, are also fine. You know, J.P. Morgan moves $6 trillion around the world every day. We don't do it in cash. It's done digitally. Yeah. If it can be done digitally with the blockchain, so be it. But it'll still be a dollar cryptocurrency. What I have an issue with is a non-fiat cryptocurrency, dollar. So crypto, sterling, euro, yen, they're all fine. I don't personally understand the value of something that has no actual value.
Okay, so grab that cognitive dissonance there. It's got to be a fiat currency. What does a fiat currency mean? It means that it doesn't have any actual thing behind it. It doesn't have any labor behind it.
Information warfare against pushers of fake news. It's David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. I want to continue with what Jamie Dimon was saying in terms of Bitcoin, because he's talking about the essence of money and where it comes from. And we've also got a comment from Alan Greenspan who's been coming out. They're taking notice. They're taking notice because this is something that is very fundamental to their power and to their wealth. Before we go to that real quickly, I want to remind you of some of the things that we have on sale at InfoWarsStore.com. We have DNA Force now 33% off, and that is a big savings. That is a very expensive, difficult to produce item. It is frequently out of stock because of the ingredient BioPQQ. It's something that helps to maintain the health of your DNA strands. If you look at the caps on the end of your DNA strands, think of your DNA as a shoelace that's twisted into a double helix, and on the end is a cap on your shoelaces. Well, what happens if that plastic cap breaks off or erodes off? Well, the shoelace is going to come unraveled, and the same thing happens with your DNA strands. That cap on the end of the DNA strands is called a telomere, and they can look at the length of the telomere, which gradually decreases as you get older until it disappears, and then at that point, your DNA starts to unravel, and you begin to die of all kinds of natural causes, because the DNA strand has disappeared. So they can look at that, and they can kind of predict your natural lifespan, how long you're going to live, assuming that you're not going to be, they're not going to die from an automobile accident, or you're not going to be shot by a police officer while you're on your hands and knees in a hotel room. So just as looking at natural causes, they can look at that. They can predict how long you're going to survive. And so BioPQQ is a way of preserving the health of your telomeres, those end caps there. As I said earlier in the week, there was just recently a study of Amish people. They found that some Amish men had a genetic defect that kept them from making a certain protein, but that protein eroded the telomeres. And so because they couldn't make that protein, they were living on average 10 years longer than other people. That's the importance of protecting the telomere, and that's why it is such a vital issue. So you can find DNA Force, now 33% off at InfoWarsStore.com. Let's go back to what Jamie Dimon was saying. And at the very end, as we were getting ready to go out, I just want to repeat this for you. He said, what I have an issue with is a non-fiat cryptocurrency. He says, I don't personally understand the value of something that has no actual value. You mean like the U.S. dollar? That has actually no value, except that the government says that it does. Then he goes on to say, well, you know, the famous tulip bulb thing. As I said, they always bring the tulip bulb stuff in. And if you go back and you look at the seminal work on this from McKay, 1841, it was Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. He talked about the tulip bulb mania. He talked about the South Sea investment mania. He also talked about the Mississippi Company mania. So there's been a lot of bubbles. There were several of them up to that point. But, you know, we've had a lot of bubbles since 1841 that they didn't want to talk about. They didn't want to talk about the bubble that we had in real estate, the bubble in real estate that's starting again, as I pointed out earlier. And I'm going to talk about this now, the bubble that we have in pension plans or the bubble that we have in their fiat currency, the petrodollar. There's a lot of people out there who are looking to get rid of that. A lot of other governments are trying to get rid of that. So he talks about he doesn't understand a non-fiat currency. And he goes on to say, you know, the only value of Bitcoin is what the other guy will pay for it. Yeah. It's called a marketplace. It's called buyers and sellers who find that there is value in something. He doesn't understand that. He wants to have a system where the government and a central bank that is privately owned make that decision for you. They will tell you how much that is worth. And so let's hear Jamie Dimon in praise of the government, in praise of central banks, and in praise of central control of fiat. In other words, it has the value that I tell you that it has. Here's what Jamie Dimon goes on to say.
And the other thing I've always made of Bitcoin, governments, and this is not a technological statement, governments are going to crush it one day. Governments like to know where the money is, who has it, and what you're doing with it. And you, in case you haven't noticed. Okay?
Hold that right there. Yeah, that's the whole thing. That's why cryptocurrencies exist. Because government wants to know where the money is. They want to know who has it. They want to know what you're doing with it, in case you haven't noticed. And a lot of us think it's not your business. A lot of us don't like being your slaves. Now, for the slave masters, like Jamie Dimon, it's a great system, isn't it? A lot of people don't like that. And so that's the reason for the existence of things like Bitcoin. And it's the reason for the rise of other currencies. As we talked about when we were joined on Monday with John McAfee, the reason you have other cryptocurrencies that are even more private, where you can't tell who the money is being sent to, who you can't tell who is receiving the money, who you can't tell how much money is being sent. So sender, receiver, and the amount are all encrypted as well. And governments don't like that idea. So he says governments are going to come along and they're going to crush it. Let's continue with what he has to say.
Currency, like to control their own economy. So China's already put curbs on it. Japan, you know, they say Japan accepted Bitcoin. No, they didn't. What I gather Japan did was they call it J-coin. It's a yen cryptocurrency. It's not a non-fiat. There's a big difference.
Hold it right there. Okay. All right, so let's talk about that. China put curbs on it. How'd that work out? When Gerald Celente was here, he said, you know how many Chinese yuan were being converted into cryptocurrency as a percentage? It was only about 5%. After they banned it, it soared to 20%. Recently, it's been about 15% of people turning in their fiat currency for Bitcoin. In Japan, yes, it is Bitcoin. It is Bitcoin. They may have something called J-coin as well, but it is Bitcoin that they're doing there. As a matter of fact, Japan and South Korea account for about 65% of the fiat currency that is turned into Bitcoin. And so, yeah, they're doing it, and they're actually were using it as a currency. I don't know if that's still happening now that it's gotten so speculative. But let's go on back to his comments even after the disinformation. But he has some interesting conclusions here.
Legitimately, okay, it's close to gold. Not really. Gold is limited and has been around a long time, and it's close to a fiat currency. Not really. A fiat currency is where the government says this is your legal tender. You have to give it and accept it. And there's a central bank. Now, of course, they can misuse it, the central bank, and inflate it. So there is a use case for Bitcoin. If you live in Venezuela, North Korea, or if you're a criminal, great, great product.
So, yeah, he says, so the central bank is going to tell you this is what it's worth, and you have to use this. And he goes, there is, if it's a bad central bank, like he mentions Venezuela, North Korea, you know, there's a case for that. Or if you're a criminal. Oh, let's just say, or if your country is run by criminals, like it is in North Korea or in Venezuela, or perhaps in America. Are these people who do whatever they wish and nobody ever holds them accountable? Are the people who can set up slush funds for sexual assault, or people who can do insider trading and never get called on it? The people, the private individuals who own the Federal Reserve, are they criminals? Well, no, not if the government says they're not criminals, but I think their actions would be considered to be criminal. Let's look at Greenspan, who ran the private U.S. Federal Reserve and was able to take markets up and take markets down, and he would know whether they were going to go up or down, just like Nancy Pelosi and others in Congress would know whether or not their legislation was going to take a particular business or a particular industry up or down, and they could buy and sell in advance, and there was no law against them doing it. But if you try to do that, you're going to go to jail. And by the way, they didn't send Martha Stewart to jail for that. They sent her to jail for lying to the FBI. And they are not going to send themselves to jail for insider trading. They can do that all the time. And of course, the Federal Reserve is the very essence of insider trading. Alan Greenspan compared Bitcoin to that of an early American form of money called the Continental Currency. That was what we had at the Revolutionary War. And he said it came into use in 1775 and it became worthless by 1782. He said it was a paper-based legal tender. It was used at the time of the American Revolution and it was not backed by commodities such as gold. So therefore, Alan Greenspan says it was useless and Bitcoin is like that. Well, no, actually it's not. So if his Federal Reserve notes are not backed by gold, they're backed by the Saudis saying that we are the world standard. Oh, that should give you pause, shouldn't it? The guy that just did retail therapy by giving himself a $450 million Da Vinci painting of Jesus, the Arab who bought a painting of Jesus for $450 million. Those are the people that our currency depends on. Stay with us. Be right back. I'm David Knight. Does history have any bearing on our lives today? Can we learn anything from what's happened in the past? You know, if we don't, we're going to be at the mercy of people like Alan Greenspan and Jamie Dimon, or as his detractors like to call him, Jamie Demon. These people who love their money, love the power that their deception gives them, their deception over us gives them. Alan Greenspan, who says, compares Bitcoin to the continental currency. And remember, there was an expression, it wasn't worth a continental. Yeah, it collapsed because it was a paper fiat currency created by the government. It had nothing of any value backing it. And that's what the currency that Alan Greenspan controlled is actually like. As a matter of fact, we might want to take a look at the history of what happened with the continentals. As he's saying, you know, hey, you know, that was a worthless thing because it wasn't backed by gold. And it's like, neither is your currency, Alan. And we had the founders write in the Constitution that the dollar would be backed by gold and silver. So if we were to follow the Constitution, then you probably wouldn't have things like Bitcoin. But he doesn't want to follow the Constitution. They were also adamantly opposed to a central bank like the one that he ran, and they would had even a bigger problem with the fact that it was privately controlled and unaccountable to the people. But he said, Bitcoin is a really fascinating example of how human beings create value, and it's not always rational. It is not a rational currency in that case. He loves to talk about rational and irrational. Remember when he said irrational exuberance and so forth? That's his favorite key phrase because, you know, he's just so rational. Married to Andrea Mitchell, part of Ayn Rand's inner circle. Yeah, he just wanted to get control. Just an elitist, you know. That's the problem. Some libertarians, if libertarianism is not tempered with a Christian morality, I think you run off the rails and become somebody like Alan Greenspan, who just I've got this. I'm better than everybody else. This elitist mindset that you see in Ayn Rand, and if it's not tempered. Then they become monsters like Alan Greenspan, lying to people saying, oh, we got to watch out, make sure we don't get the continental currency that wasn't backed by gold, when he actually runs it and ignores the Constitution. But it's not the only bubble that's out there, the Bitcoin bubble. I'm going to tell you, and this is important to know, all the different bubbles that are bubbling up throughout the world economy right now. Novo Gratz says, we're not close to the end of the bubble on the Bitcoin. He said, this is a speculative phase, and we're not close to the end of the speculative phase. He said, Bitcoin futures will give rise to ETFs and even broader adoption and a sell-off after the speculative phase is complete. He said, banks will be slow to move into this industry, and he doesn't see a quick adoption of Bitcoin as a currency. Right now, it is a store of value. Where can you store your value? Where do you store your labor, right? How do you exchange products of value and so forth? That's what money was for. A lot of people look at pension plans maybe as a store of their labor. They work very hard for that. And as Zero Hedge points out, it's almost a given that the pension fund bubble will end badly. This is the guy who is the founder of the Vanguard Group. His name is Jack Bogle. He says, U.S. pension plans are doomed. There's a bubble for you. You don't have to go back to the 1600s and talk about tulip bulbs forever. You can talk about the pension funds right now. He predicted that bond returns will only be about 3% over the next decade. He says that makes it almost impossible for pensions to meet their return requirements of 7.5% to 8% to remain solvent. He says it's almost a given that it will end badly. He wrote a post. It was entitled, The Unsolvable Math Problem. Public pensions are underfunded by as much as $8 trillion. $8 trillion. That's private ones. You get make it even worse, you take a look at the public pension plans. And he said public pension plan underfunding could be closer to $5.5 trillion. Or over 2.5 times more than current estimates. Others have suggested that returns should be closer to the risk-free rates, which would imply an even more draconian $8.4 trillion underfunding. And he says, you know, 15 million union employees may not be happy about supporting their political candidates if they knew that their retirement plans were insolvent. You don't really see that. Unless you've got something like an IRA, this goes into a pension plan, whether it's a public or a private pension plan. You don't really know the status of it. You're just hoping that the people who are running this thing are going to have the money there for you when you go out. That's a bubble that's there. Also, housing bubble 2.0. Back in 2005, they point out on Zero Hedge, anybody with a modest amount of startup capital and a dream could become a millionaire by flipping houses. The complete disregard for the underlying risk was later exposed as one of the largest pricing bubbles in history. That's the bubble they don't want to talk about. They redirect you to the one 400 years ago, the tulips. It seems, though, that the lessons learned from the previous crash in housing only a decade ago have now been forgotten. And here's an example that came out of the Wall Street Journal. They talked to a woman in Seattle, and she and her boyfriend have been looking to get into the housing market. They've been looking for 6 months, but every time they get ready to make a deal on a house, somebody comes along and buys it out from underneath them. They're trying to get their credit together, and somebody comes along and buys it for cash. She said this has happened 3 times, most recently 2 weeks ago. And then the Wall Street Journal makes this comment. They say, they quote a person who is a brokerage company, a real estate brokerage company in Seattle. They say, first-time buyers are drive the market. If they are blocked out of the market, then we're not building that next generation of homeowners. And they say the starter home market is especially high. Average down payments for lower price homes have climbed by more than a third over the last decade, while down payments for higher priced homes have edged up by only 2%. Now, let me tie this into some of the political information that we had earlier this week. You know, we had a fight about a week or two ago over, it was right after we came back from Thanksgiving. And the guy who was running the bureaucracy that was created by Elizabeth Warren, that is metastasizing very quickly and its influence over our lives, the Consumer Financial Protection Board. He left, and then the number two there said, I'm taking charge, and got into a fight with President Trump, even sued him to say, I get to pick, I'm going to be the person in charge. You don't have any say-so about replacing this individual. And Mulvaney, that President Trump put in, Mulvaney had said, this is a corrupt organization, and I also have an article I didn't get a chance to get to here. It looks like maybe there was some back and forth with money going back to Democrat candidates from the CFPB. But think about what they have done. In an effort to limit risk, they have required higher deposits. They've required a lot more financial accounting because, you know, there was a lot of garbage that went on through that housing bubble, and they don't want the banks to get hurt. They don't want the big banks to get hurt. All the extra financial requirements that they put in there, all the extra credit requirements that they put in there have, number one, they're keeping people who are first-time buyers who could qualify, they're keeping them out of the market because it's getting so overpriced, cash buyers are coming in and taking it out. It also has shut down hundreds and hundreds of medium to small to medium-sized banks. So the really giant banks are the only ones who can compete in some of these markets, loaning money to businesses and so forth. As they say, more than 20% of the houses under $250,000 in the Boise, Idaho area sold for cash. Why is that? It's because of how difficult it is to get a loan. That is how regulations, like we were talking about earlier, regulations against drunk drivers, redefining what that is, and other issues, trying to get more fuel economic cars, the CAFE standards, that can always backfire, and it has backfired, and this is backfiring as well. The financial regulations from the CFPB have backfired, but we still have a housing bubble because we've got people coming in and buying it in cash, and it is going up faster than it did before. There's another bubble. The U.S. credit card debt has surged above $1 trillion, and we had the single biggest monthly increase in consumer debt since November 2016, which just came up ending in October, and that's not even including Black Friday. And then here's the final bubble, folks, the dollar bubble, the petrodollar. De-dollarization continues. China, Iran are going to eliminate the greenback from their bilateral trade agreements. China is making moves to replace and to move away. So is Russia making moves to move away from the dollar hegemony, as they point out. Pepe Escobar says, to overcome the excessive domination of the limited number of reserve currencies, the politest way of stating what the BRICS have been discussing for years now is how to bypass the U.S. dollar as well as the petrodollar. So these other governments, they also have their fiats and their currencies, and they're looking to replace that. So where do you put your money? I mean, it's not an easy choice, is it? You know, Bitcoin is there. As one of the articles said, somebody who lived in Venezuela, who traded 100 bolivars for $10 and then traded the $10 for one Bitcoin, now has $13,000, or I'd say 15 maybe today. And his point is this. If we have a world that is ordered based on free market choices, you know, that the thing that Jamie Dimon despises so much, the fact that two people agree on the value of something, if we don't order the world that way, then we will order it by orders, by fiats from very powerful rich people like him. And he says, good ideas don't require force. Bad ideas are the ones that require force. And that is Jamie Dimon's final argument. He's going to force you to accept his worthless paper currency. That's it for today's show. Thank you for joining us.